My greatest fear is making the person I love upset. I will do anything. I will do anything possible to make you not upset. I want you to feel seen and heard and loved. If you are angry or emotional, if you are upset with something that I'm doing, until very recently, I had the codependent belief that if you're good, if you feel good, then so will I. I'll just follow suit. I don't have any needs separate from that. Like, if you feel good, if you feel happy, if you're calm, I'm happy. If you are happy, I am happy. Which is like the codependent mantra, and I had no idea. And my behavior in relationships was centered entirely around that. How do I make you feel so good all the time? And why did I shut down in arguments? Because I was failing. Because I had done the opposite of what I was supposed to do. The opposite of my meaning in life. And this relationship that I'm in now, we're about to get married. The hardest thing about this relationship has been, and something that I didn't even know was such a big problem for me, I shut down in arguments. And that happens in two ways. One, either I would, in past relationships and this one, my knee-jerk response was to just go, okay, if I can't fix this, if we're at a point in the argument where I can't figure out how to make you feel good, maybe I just shouldn't say anything at all. It's not safe. When we don't feel safe, when we don't feel safe to be fully seen and heard, then we go into freeze mode. And when we feel in danger, our brains react in one of three ways: fight, flight, freeze. Fight, the problem is small enough I can probably defeat it. Flight, the problem is so big I better run away. Or freeze, I'm not entirely sure how to handle this problem. Maybe if I play dead, it'll go away. That's like a really simplified version that I love. I think it's a blast. So in arguments, I shut down because I hit my wall. I was trying so hard all day and all night and all month and all week and all year to make you feel good. And apparently I failed. And now you're telling me that you're upset with me, but I've been spending energy trying to make you happy. So now you're mad. What am I supposed to do with that? My best isn't good enough. I don't have anything else to give. And then it's just this like a defensive self-hating spiral. And yes, sometimes in arguments I get defensive. And other times in arguments, I just shut down and I don't know how to respond because I feel like I have failed on a level that is profound. And I've been working on that so much in this relationship. And what a new behavior that came up that I had never experienced before is that in the past, my answer was flight. If my partner was upset too frequently and I was getting exhausted by it and I was never expressing how I felt or my perspective, of course, I would just break up out of nowhere in their perspective. From their perspective, I'd break up with them. Or I just disappear in one way or another. And in this one, I had decided this is an incredible man who's a great partner. I may not be able to see it right now, but I'm sticking through. And because I removed the flight option, I had to start learning how to fight and how to handle it when I froze. And I had this new behavior that came up that I had never experienced before. And it happened a lot at the beginning, and it still happens every once in a while now, where we'll get in an argument and I will feel like I have failed my purpose in life. Because my purpose in life as much as I'm working on it, still feels like my purpose in life is to make you feel good. And when I'm failing at that, I started doing this. I will punch myself to the point where like I have this whole constellation of bruises, or I would whack my head into the wall, but it would always be somewhere that no one could see later. So I would like whack my head into the shower wall and I'd have a bump under my hair, and I would know while I was doing it, like, this is a weird thing to be doing, but it felt like I had to do it. And I'm glad that I haven't had a self-harm that has gone beyond that. But I understand the compulsion, because it feels like it's what I deserve. And it's really frustrating that no one's going to do that to me. Like, there is a part of me that I feel like I failed so epically that the only way to get justice, the only way for my physical experience to align with my emotional experience, is for physical harm to happen. Like, that's the only way this makes sense. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that was happening. And that comes from shutting down instead of sharing how I'm feeling, instead of sharing what's going on. And that comes from all of this to say, I don't know if you caught the through line, but there is an immense amount of shame around my needs and my fears. I also need to feel good. I also am the main character of my life, and I want to feel good and I want to have a great life. And in those moments, I felt ashamed of that. And I felt ashamed of not prioritizing the person I was talking to. And I felt ashamed that I had a need that maybe he didn't. So I would get afraid, because it's always the root of every argument always is a fear and a need. I have a need that I want to receive from you that you're not fulfilling. And I have a fear of some sort, a fear that you don't love me as much as I love you, a fear that you're going to leave me, a fear that you judge me, a fear, all of it based around there's not closeness. There's a distance between you and me, and it's growing, and I'm not safe. I'm alone. And of course, that feels like life and death to our brains. We are not made to be alone as humans. We are social relational creatures. The only ones of us that survived were the ones of us that recognized we needed each other and relied on each other. That is our greatest power. Like, even the interaction we're having right now is based on the fact that somebody invented something that led to something else, that led to the technology I'm recording on, the technology you're listening on. Like, we need each other both in that abstract way and very much in this way, talking way, this, I need skin to skin touch. I need eye contact. I need you to look at me and to kiss me and to hold me. And those needs are so real and so beautiful. And what make us beautiful and powerful as a species, they give us this place to come from into life with confidence. And what's been so cool through this relationship with Dan is that we have been, and we're going to do an episode together. I'm so excited how we've helped each other become securely attached. It's going to be awesome. But anyway, what's been so awesome is that Dr. Sue Johnson, who is my favorite couples therapist by a landslide, she coined the phrase hold me tight conversations. And that's what Dan and I have been working on creating. And what I knew kind of maybe would be maybe possible in theory, but I didn't really want to believe it because it's scary to believe. Couples can radically heal each other in a way that we can't heal ourselves, which is a scary thing to even say. Because it is a very, I mean, it takes two to tangle. Like, you have to be, I have to be doing the work on myself and show up to those conversations, and I have to choose to be vulnerable, and I have to ask for him to be vulnerable. But hold me tight conversations are conversations in which, usually after saying the stupid, mean, like, well, it doesn't seem like you really, you don't seem to really be missing the fact you're coming home a lot later, and it doesn't seem like you really miss our dinners together. I thought they were important to you, but I guess not. It's easy to do that, right? And then pull back and go, oh, okay. You've been coming home late lately, and it's been making me, I'm scared that you don't care about this time as much as I do, and I really care about it. It's such a beautiful time to connect, and it makes me feel so loved, and I need that. I need that quality time with you, and I'm really afraid that you don't, and I'm embarrassed that I have a need that apparently you don't. It makes me feel like the needy one in the relationship, and I'm really afraid of that. Which then opens up to him being able to say, I've been really stressed by how much I've been working, and I miss those too. I wasn't even thinking about it because I'm so distracted by how stressed I am. But it would definitely make me feel a lot better if we found a way to connect. Like, being able to have that conversation, that's the difference. That's the hold me tight conversation. And instead, we choose emotional isolation, where I go and self-harm because I'm too ashamed to admit that I have a need that you might not, that you might shame me for. And I have a fear that you might shame me for, and it might cause more distance. So instead we choose to isolate, and I choose to be like, it's fine. But it is such a physically, literally toxic. Like, it causes this whole loneliness epidemic and how it's hurting everybody's health. That's what this is. It's that emotional isolation. So not shutting down out of fear, like, oh, well, I guess I can't do this, but going, okay, here we go. Here's my need. Here's my fear. Please tell me one of your needs and fears. I'm so scared. I'm so scared that sharing this is going to screw everything up. Most people never knew that they could talk like this. I didn't know that people could talk like this. We don't know it's an option. We don't see it. It hasn't been modeled for us. It's not common in society. I'm excited that this is now a thing that's like getting spread out there. It is transformative, but it's freaking scary and it's intense. And it is the most rewarding thing I have ever done in my life. I talk a lot about my partner and how much I love him and how incredible Dan is. And a big reason for that is he is always willing to fight through this and learn and be vulnerable and overshare and be messy together. And yeah, we get mad at each other and we have fights and we say snide remarks and we get offended and he gets mad that I'm on my phone and I get mad that he's on his phone. And what, we get mad for these little things. But the reason I think he is the greatest catch in the world is that he wants so badly to love me really well and to build something beautiful with me. And I want that too. And I'm really excited about the future of couples and long-term relationships and loving relationships, because this information is starting to get spread. And I really think this is the antidote to what we're facing right now. This is the healing our world is in desperate need of. And it's not, by the way, when I was growing up and well into my 20s, I was waiting for somebody to force me to love myself. If I loved you hard enough, you would feel loved and love me back. And once you loved me hard enough and you demanded that I also love me, then that's when I would love me. That's when I would be saved. I was waiting for someone to save me. And when I'm explaining this conversation and like all of this hold me tight conversations and not shutting down in arguments and how to argue better and all that, right? Explaining that, the thing that I hope you don't take away is cool. My partner needs to be nicer and better to me. The thing I hope you do take away is cool. My partner and I have some messy conversations we're going to have together, and I am going to hold my partner tight, and he or she is going to hold me tight in our fear together. But I'm just excited about being alive at this time because I think it is as divisive and polarized and isolated and all the stuff as it is in our time. It is also a revolution for love. And I see it growing, and I see it, the ability for it to grow. And I'm really excited about that. You're here right now. That's evidence, man. That's evidence. Okay. I hope you love your day. I hope you love you. Good Morgan.